It was a Monday in July and Manhattan was sweltering. I needed to sit down, to cool down. I'd walked 40 blocks only to find the Chelsea Hotel closed for renovations. Underneath a tower of scaffolding, a young fellow with curls springing out from beneath his hard hat was flinging splintered sheets of MDF into a skip. "Residents only," he said, and turning his taut brown shoulder to me, he got on with his work. Grace had never heard of the Chelsea Hotel. "What do you want to go there for?" she'd said. To her mind, it was high time I got a job. She'd one lined up for me and all, waitressing at some Irish bar in Midtown, McCool's. "Have you ever met anyone named McCool?" I said. "Do you want the job or not?" I told her I did. I was to start on the brunch shift. She'd been showing me how to carry plates, 3 and 4 at a time, walking the length of our railroad apartment with Delph wobbling on my outstretched arms and her on at me to mind where I was going and not what I was doing. I'd be serving Eggs Benedict and Florentine, or the full Irish if you wanted it, 2 rashers, 2 sausages, black and white pudding, eggs over easy, slithering around on the plate. There was a bottle of chef sauce on every table. For $15, you got coffee refills and a watery Bloody Mary. "I'd make 100 on a good day," Grace said. "What's the big deal about this Chelsea Hotel?"
"Nothing."
She'd curled her lip, and dipping her head between the fleshy white insides of her thighs, continued painting her toenails. Grace had been in America a month by then. She was the one who'd set it up. One minute we were doing our finals in Cork, the next she was on the phone from New York telling me to come on over. She'd found a sublet on the Lower East Side, a 6-floor walk-up. Not a bother to her. She had agricultural stamina and a string of inter-county medals to prove it. On the day I arrived, I cut the legs off my jeans and went to Best Buy for a $30 fan. My giblets were stewing. Sweat bubbled in the hot creases where skin touched off skin. Behind my knees, beneath my breasts. Grace put her Converse on the fire escape and I did the same. Then I traipsed around barefoot in her wake. We'd no shower, just an old bathtub in the kitchen. It was covered by a wooden hatch that you lifted and hooked onto the wall whenever you needed it. I filled the bath with cold water, stripped to my bra and knickers and got in. And there we sat, at opposite ends, drinking Snapple and listening to the Z train trundle across the river to Brooklyn. Although we'd shared a flat in college, things were awkward between myself and Grace those first few days, beneath the hulk of the Williamsburg Bridge. Its concrete slip ran parallel to our only window. More than once, a driver caught me staring into the traffic and honked or waved back through the trusswork. Grace wanted to stick an air conditioner in the window. She said we could go halves once I got paid. Until then, she closed it for security and I opened it again in the hope of circulating some air. All it did was pump more heat and noise and fumes in on top of us. I liked to climb out the window in the morning and sit on the fire escape, watching the Department of Sanitation collect the detritus of the day before. I wasn't ready to sling hash at McCool's. I was happy out, moseying my way uptown, taking it all in. The Dominicans outside the bodega on Clinton Street hissed when they saw me coming. On Houston, people milled about, clutching beakers filled with ice and caffeine. Cargo panted hipsters. Dainty Asian women in black shift dresses. Office workers with half moons of perspiration under their shirt sleeves. All of us on the hot, nervy brink of eruption. Tar bubbled beneath our feet. The asphalt trembled whenever a train passed below, exhaling gusts of hot air through metal grates in the sidewalk, the stampede rhythm of the carriages receding as a human swell rolled up the subway steps and poured out onto the street. People scarpered in every direction. And in the clearing, I could see the silver ribbon of Fifth Avenue unfurl before me. 10 miles a day I must have been walking. The blisters didn't come up until the curly-headed lad outside the Chelsea turned me away. It was only a few blocks to Madison Square, where I could have dawdled under the prow of the Flatiron, working up a second wind. But with my genetic predisposition for obstinance, or maybe pure stupidity, I limped on down the dark side of the street until, too sore to go on, I stalled outside a condemned-looking dive called Mikey's. Pushing the door, I was surprised to find the place open, reeking of bleach and stagnant spillage, but open nonetheless. There were no customers, just a barmaid rollerblading around and dropping ashtrays onto tables. She was about my age, peroxide blonde and dressed in a scrap of stonewashed denim. Her bare shoulders were tattooed with angel wings. I sat unnoticed at the bar while she hummed along to the jukebox, shuffling her deck of beer mats and dealing them out in hands of four onto the formica tabletops. When she reached the back room, she pirouetted through a set of saloon doors and vanished into the ladies. I hopped to the other end of the bar, where I could not be ignored. All that separated me from the toilet was a green expanse of pool table, which, I noticed, had at either end a cube of blue chalk dangling by a chain. In a display cabinet on the wall, four long leather pouches hung like animal carcasses, each branded in slanted gold leaf with a name. Barry. Buddy. Ed. Marlene. The saloon doors swung open and Blondie reappeared.
"You hear about the job?"
she said, swinging around to face me as she glided backwards behind the bar. With one hand, she reached inside the fridge. With the other, she picked up a cordless phone into which I heard her yodel,
"Someone's here about the job!"
She planted a bottle of Budweiser on the bar and told me Clancy wouldn't be long. I slugged it down to the ankles and was about to ask for another when a trapdoor flew open, and out of the ground crawled a hairy, red-faced ogre. He was wearing a Grateful Dead t-shirt and filthy jeans. This, I reckoned, was the eponymous Mikey, a.k.a. Clancy, and he was barreling down the bar in my directions, his eyes sucking me in. I knew the look well. He was trying to reconstruct the whys and wherefores of me being there. Where had he been drinking when he met me? Mikey Clancy would never have offered me a job sober. It was obvious. "How's it going?" I said.
"Irish," he muttered, as if that explained a lot.
He grabbed a can of Pabst Blue Ribbon from the fridge and downed it with hostile thirst before informing this was no Irish bar. He didn't care if I knew how to pull a pint. Shelley, he butted his head in Blondie's direction, was moving to weekends, and if I was covering midweek, I'd better know how to tend an American bar. I was quizzed on country music and the constituents of a Long Island iced tea. I must have given a better than expected account of myself, because Clancy's features softened. Merely ugly now. He no longer looked like an argument waiting to happen. Pulling a roll of banknotes out from under his belly, he peeled one off and told me to get myself a bartender's Bible. I could feel him take the measure of me as I walked towards the door, face twisted with the torment of trying not to limp. The next day, I shoplifted a cocktail book from Barnes & Noble and read it in the park before setting off for Mikey's. I was wearing flip-flops, my denim cut-offs, and a black lacy Penny's vest that, judging by the sour look Grace shot me, might have been underwear. Clancy didn't comment except to say that redheads made more money with their hair down. He put a float in the till and told me to give a kamikaze buyback for every fourth drink. "Have one yourself," he said. "And if you don't want one, fake it." Cocktails were $5 at happy hour, and I was to use speed rack liquor only.
"Got that, Irish?"
"Got it."
"Sweet."
away he squelched, and I pulled the bobbin out of my hair. I had exactly 5 customers on my first shift at Mikey's. A morose bag of bones arrived bang on happy hour, drank 4 dirty vodka martinis, and was on the way out when 3 preppy lads hopped onto the bar stools opposite me. They ordered a round of black and tans and ogled the brass that hung above the top shelf like bunting, encouraged by the ceiling fans to occasionally flutter. "It's more fun here on the weekends," said one. They hooked it then, leaving me 3 beer-soaked dollars. I took a pickled egg from the mason jar behind the bar, and I watched myself eat in the mirror. Hours passed before the door creaked open again. In sloped a long-legged yoke who'd the look of 50, but could have been a derelict 42. His name was Tim. This was imparted in a manner that suggested he was a regular. He downed a pint of Guinness and, through a slit in his cream-coated whiskers, asked for another. When he went to take the pint from me, the head slopped over the lip and stout dribbled down his fingers. Raising one buttock off the stool, he reached into his trousers and produced a hanky the size of a tea towel. Then, wiping the mess away, he asked where I was from. Next thing, his wallet was out, flopped open in his hand and presented in the way a butcher might show you a steak. My ex was Irish. He was prodding a photo of a woman with a voluminous perm and elaborate creoles. "She's pretty," I lied. He ignored me and asked where Shelley was. "Moved to weekends. She's a dancer."
"Your ex?"
"No, Shelley." My conversation with Tim spluttered on in this fashion. He bought me a beer. I ate another pickled egg. When I'd finished it, he claimed to have seen Clancy pissing in the mason jar. I slid a kamikaze down the bar and called last orders. The roll and clunk of Mikey's shutters announced that I was locking up. Empty as the street appeared, I knew it wasn't possible to be alone in Manhattan, even in the meatpacking district, which, according to Grace, was populated by rats and crack whores exclusively. Making a beeline for 8th Avenue, I was relieved to see a cab coming towards me with its light on. I hopped in, and comforted by the click of the door lock, spread myself over the cool vinyl seat. Our eyes met in the mirror, and the moment of recognition moved like a blade across my tongue. I'd a lungful of complaint when he disengaged the meter. What came out instead was an airless squeak. "Delancey Street." We drove in silence. Outside, the city flashed by in technicolor bursts of neon. Nail parlors and noodle bars, stark, fluorescent drugstores, flags I did not recognize, delis that never close. Tim kept on going, the numbered streets descending, down, down, down.